The Business News Hour is brought to you by the Greater Des Moines Partnership, the economic and community development organization serving Central Iowa, DesMoinesMetro.com, and Arion Technology, HR and contact center solutions, all under one roof at AUREON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Business News Hour. You want to reach out to us, we are on Twitter. It is at IOB underscore News Hour. That's at IOB underscore News Hour. This interview and all of our long-form business interviews you can find online. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and also Podbean with our radio blog. With us in studio, yeah, good stuff. We're all over the place, you know. With us in studio is Teresa Greenfield. Teresa is seeking the opportunity to represent Iowa in Iowa's 3rd Congressional District, 16 counties, by the way, from Polk County all the way to Pottawatomie County and south of Interstate 80. Down to the Minnesota border. Missouri border. The other M. Minnesota border. We were talking about Lapland, right?
We were just talking about Lapland. They've got it, too.
So let's spend some time. And for full disclosure, I think I should let everyone know that I've had the pleasure of knowing Teresa not for months, but for actually years. And we've worked together on a number of projects. So some of these things I know about. Others, I'll just ask the questions, okay?
Fire away.
All right, so let's start with policy.
Yeah.
We just had a news story today that the First National Bank of Omaha has severed their relationship with the National Rifle Association. They've taken a look at what's going on with consumers and their customers, and they said, no, we're not going to be co-branding any kind of a bank card with the NRA. That whole conversation has got, you know, that and other things. NRA Today came out and they were blistered out that we're here for freedom and goodness and love and motherhood. And meanwhile, the pressure continues. So when we talk about firearms.
Yeah.
As a scrappy farm girl.
Yes.
Who has no doubt gone pheasant hunting or whatever. Well, what do you think? What should the United States do? What would Teresa Greenfield in the United States Congress do relative to firearms in this country?
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. I was raised on the farm, and guns were a part of farm culture, whether it was sport, oftentimes hunting, though. So the sport made you a better shot so that you could have venison sausage for the holidays.
Right.
I mean, that's what it was about. It was also, you know, keeping varmints out of the barn and protecting our livestock. But we were raised and trained to be responsible gun owners. And I'll tell you, I think Iowans are responsible gun owners. And it is time for responsible gun owners to take back this conversation about gun violence in the United States and step up and be part of that conversation. So Teresa Greenfield in Congress, well, one, when you have over 90, on average, about 90 people a day dying from gun violence, we've got a public health crisis. And we need to talk about that, and we need to invest dollars in research to understand that, understand steps forward. There are many, many common sense first steps that I think common sense gun owners can agree to and move forward with, like closing gun show loopholes, expanding background checks, investing in our federal instant check program so that it's state of the art. And there's really simple things no one should object to. If you are on a no-fly list, which means the government has identified you as somebody who is a threat and you can't get on an airplane, you absolutely should be on a list where you can't buy a firearm. And there's many, many things that we can do and steps we can take forward. So
let me ask you about a couple of things that the students that are from Parkland, Florida, are asking about, and they are demanding not only in the state legislature in Tallahassee, but also in conversations that are going on in Washington, D.C. right now. And that is the utilization of assault firearms in the United States, banana clip magazines, those types of things that are designed for one purpose, according to the military, which is killing as many people in as short amount of time as possible. What about those things? What do we do?
Yeah. Right. Well, first off, I'm absolutely delighted to see our young folks standing up and speaking out. And soon they're going to be old enough to vote. And that's going to even be better. So what do we do? Well, I think that, you know, those guns are weapons of war. That's what they were designed for. And, you know, for me as a responsible gun owner, I see no need to own one or for anyone to own one. If you need one of those kinds of guns to go coyote hunting, well, come on out to my farm and I'll teach you how to do it with a long gun the right way. So they should be demanding that we have that conversation. Are they the right kinds of guns to have in just anybody's hands?
Teresa Greenfield, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about policy issues. One of those issues that has come up with this is the utilization and the acquirement of guns by individuals with mental health disorders. And that begs the question about mental health care, not only in Iowa, but across the nation, where we've seen people turned away in some instances. Where's Teresa Greenfield on mental health and mental health access in the United States?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's part of this crisis with gun violence. So, again, average of 90 people a day, pick your number.
Over
half of them are suicide.
And farms.
And domestic violence. And so I think mental health is absolutely part of that conversation. As a matter of fact, I was out with a group of union folks. We had a wonderful conversation about being responsible gun owners. And they talked about wanting to invest more in mental health. And so I encourage them to vote for governors that will do that, as opposed to the Branst administration, which in the state of Iowa has closed two mental hospitals, underfunded, laid off staff, and helped create this crisis that we have here.
Mental health is obviously part of health care in general. Mm-hmm. We have been through all kinds of interesting genuflections with regard to the Affordable Care Act and where that's going. And is health care a right or is it a privilege? Where's Teresa Greenfield when we talk about health care? Is it a right? Is it a privilege? How do we go about ensuring and making sure that people get adequate health care in the United States?
Well, Teresa's all about everybody has the right to health care. And the goal is universal health care, in my opinion. What our next steps are? Well, for me, I think we have to continue to stop any repeal and replace of the ACA. It has done so much good. But over the course of time, we've also learned some weaknesses that it's had. And the current Republican leadership undermines it and is causing it to fail. So first, we need to stop repeal and replace. Second, when I get to Congress, then we need to take the steps to stabilize it, shore up our markets. And there are some bipartisan folks working on that right now, and they need a new batch of leaders that want to help with that. Think of all the good the ACA has done, whether your child gets to stay on your plan or you no longer can be denied health care because of pre-existing conditions, and of course women's health care and preventative care and mental health care. So that is absolutely the step we need to take. After that, we absolutely need then to continue to work on what's best next, whether that's public options on top of the ACA, whether that's Medicaid for more, Medicaid for all, Medicaid for many. And then, of course, there's the conversation about single payer. All good conversations to have. Right now, David Young and the current leadership is going backwards. 13 million people just lost health care as part of this tax reform plan. And we've got to bring them back on board and then continue to move forward so everyone has access to health care. Everybody's getting health care. It's just in the emergency room.
Yeah, and that's very expensive.
That's sick care.
Yeah. One of the things that when we talk about insurance, Medicare for all, or some type of a national health care plan, which most other industrialized countries in the world have outside of the United States, we're sitting right now, we're smack dab in the middle of Des Moines, Iowa, which happens to be a mega center for insurance companies. What do you say to insurance companies and their executives when we're talking about, well, let's do Medicare for all or universal health care, some type of a government-run agency? What's that conversation like?
I think insurance companies have to be at the table and have more conversation about how we provide care for everyone. Americans are demanding it. The polls overwhelmingly show everybody wants access to health care. It's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democratic issue. It's not an independent issue. It's also the number one topic that comes up when I'm in the district, whether it's mental health care, high cost of prescription drugs, rural access, end-of-life care, prenatal care. It's all there. So they need to be at the table to be part of that solution going forward. And I think there's ways that we can help them do that. Again, public options, will make a big difference.
As we talk about public options and things that are out there, let's switch just for a moment and get into education. You know, Iowa tends to be, and I know this is a state issue, but Iowa tends to be one of the leading states in the nation where students, graduates, their parents have some of the largest student debt in the nation.
Yep.
And you may have been a product of some of that student debt at one time in your life, but it's a whole lot different in the 1980s than what it is in 2018. What do you see? Where are we going? How would Teresa Greenfield take a look at public education, the trades, community college? There's a lot of talk about free community. Where are we at?
Right. Well, I'm absolutely a product of progressive thinkers and progressive leaders. When the state of Iowa invested heavily in education, whether it's community college or four-year education, so I was able to come out of school with very little debt. I had some, but it was also at very low interest rates. The government wasn't into making money off of students in terms of their interest. We need to get back there, and the way to do that is we have to elect leaders that have those priorities. So the amount that's invested in college today is flipped. If it was 80-20 when I was a student, it's 20-80 now, or something like that. We also know that we have a huge skills gap, and we have to invest in apprenticeships, pre-apprenticeship programs in high schools, more technical training, continue to expand our community college programs. They're doing a great job out there, but helping them grow to match the needs of their communities or their region. So students can come out of high school, see a path forward by having this apprenticeship experience, go on to get the education they need, and hopefully stay in their communities. I was out in Mount Air, and they only have one service station left where you can get a car fixed. And they have nobody coming up to fill that need in their community. And they talked about the difficulty of heating and cooling and having to get someone to service it from somewhere else in the county. So there's demand for those skills. And we need to make sure that our youth see that as living wages, great jobs, and a way that they can also not only provide for their families, but maybe start their own businesses.
You make mention of the 3rd Congressional District, 16 counties that are wide and varied in their census numbers. Polk County, one of the most populous county in the state. Pottawatomie County, which would probably be the second largest. Well, also Dallas County is in there as well. And then we get into a whole bunch of rural counties that you, I would suspect, play pretty well in with your farm background. Can you talk about some stories that you're learning out there in your travels?
Sure. Well, I mean, I hope that they're loving me. I'm getting good feedback, but I'm loving being out there. Honestly, it reminds me of being home and how I grew up. The rural folks that I've been meeting, they really want to be heard. They want an opportunity to be part of the solutions for their communities, for their region, and they've got some great ideas. They absolutely are delighted when I stop out and, you know, can't get everywhere. It's just one of me. But we get out quite a bit. They want to make sure that their urban neighbors remember them and know that they're there. And I think they feel sometimes that that's not the case. I try to remind them, yep, we're remembering you. I know I will, because it's part of my experience growing up.
When we talk about rural Iowa, there are places where there's no broadband internet. There are places that infrastructure is crumbling, those types of things. How important is that to rural Iowa, that you can bring back jobs through those, and also maybe even satellite on opportunity? If there's rural broadband, you can actually take part in the economy.
It's critical. I was down, met a young woman down in Indianola area. She drives into Des Moines for work. She's a graphic designer, and she has told me that she would prefer to work from home. She could work from home on her little farm, but all she's got is hotspot on her phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ouch.
So it's impossible to be part of that digital economy, and I think I have heard that story repeated throughout the district. I'll tell you, there is a lot of good news in this district, too, when it comes to broadband. There are areas that have fiber to the home.
Absolutely.
And we need to help them grow their businesses and their digital economy. But there's an awful lot of this district that's being left behind.
All right, we're going to switch up just a little bit. And in the final few minutes that we have here, one of the things that I hear about Congressman David Young, and I was just with him on Tuesday, as a matter of fact, is that he is a really nice guy, and he tells great jokes, and he's laughable and lovable, and he's a good guy, and you know, he's friendly. So, how do you feel? What about that? How about his politics?
Well, you know, I'm not going to make any judgments about who's a nice guy and who's not. David Young votes wrong. And I think that's what the people of the third districts are talking about. That's what we're seeing in the results here. Whether that's on an evening saying you will support the ACA and then the next day in Congress voting to repeal it, whether it's a tax bill that provides enormous amounts of tax reductions and giveaways to large corporations, really not doing a whole lot for the small communities, small businesses, and individuals. We need tax reform that helps the middle class, and what he supports is tax reform for billionaires, folks that ship their jobs overseas, and that's unacceptable. I think he's forgotten where he grew up, but he spent 20 years in Washington, D.C., and now is serving in Washington, D.C., so I'm not surprised he's lost touch with rural Iowans.
When we talk about rural Iowans and their, and their needs, which are great, as well as urban Iowans, you know, Iowans in general have great needs. The tax cut and jobs bill that was passed in December, you just alluded to that. Mm-hmm. How fair is that? How good is that for your district?
Well, I think that it's not fair at all if you're an individual or a small business. You know, the 20% pass-through breaks that a lot of corporations will get, a lot of our small businesses won't. If you're a professional service, an accountant, an architect, an attorney, that's not coming to you. I talked to a woman in Creston, and she will no longer be able to write off her mileage for her business, her car, or she worked, the company she works for. And she puts on 15,000 miles a year.
That's coming out of her pocket.
That's now coming out of her pocket. And she's upset. She actually probably is going to have to find a different job. So hardworking middle-class folks, this wasn't a great deal for them at all. Donors to David Young, large corporations, they got to be pretty happy as they take those dollars to the bank.
Teresa Greenfield, ladies and gentlemen, she is one of six individuals seeking the nomination to take on David Young in the November election. The primary is scheduled for June. Thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the invitation. It's great to get out and talk to folks.
A quick 20 minutes or so,
yeah,
right?
That's a boy. Yeah.
A boy. All right. Thank you, Teresa Greenfield.
Thanks,
ladies and gentlemen, we will have all of that information for you, how to get in touch with her, up on the radio blog in just a bit. But for all of us associated with Insight on Business, the news, our Tyler Hackenmiller is our producer. He's the guy that twists the dials, make sure this gets out on the broadcast each and every day. And if you missed any or all of the interview with Teresa, we will have it up on the radio blog shortly. Patrick Wood, well, he is the program director for the radio station. Mary Sayer is the liaison between our advertising agency and the Des Moines Radio Group. Speaking of the Des Moines Radio Group, Jeff Delvaux is the general manager here, and the voice of Insight on Business, the News Hour, is Jimmy Olson. Music you're listening to right now is arranged, produced, and directed by our friend James Goodlett exclusively for the Business News Hour. For all those folks, my name is Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful evening. We'll be back, God willing, tomorrow at 5 o'clock. And oh, by the way, we will be at AMA Iowa Experience tomorrow, all day in West Des Moines. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good night.